Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez it toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
All right, everybody, let's do it. Starting pitcher previews. Here we go. We got two episodes for you. This is part one. And we got a big show today because we're on video. Heath, Scott, Chris, wave to the camera. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Which camera to wave to?
Hey, I have no idea.
This is my first time.
FBT on video. Now, if you're listening to the podcast, we're not doing this video live. That might be coming in the future. Who knows? But if you want to see what we look like, I have a collared shirt on. It's been a long time since that's happened. Go to CBSSports.com. Watch all the videos. How was everybody's weekend?
I changed a massively corroded car battery, which is the most traditionally masculine thing I've ever done in my life. So... it was a good weekend.
Congratulations, Chris. That's I went and saw Willie Nelson, which was much more fun than that.
It was pretty fun.
That sounds great. And Scott's was good. You know, if we were not on video, I would care more about your weekends. But we are professionals now, so all I care about is fantasy baseball. So what?
The professional part, I'm really not sure.
Yeah, Heath, weren't you supposed to dress up for this?
No, not at all.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wearing a baseball shirt.
Okay, good. All right. So anyway, starting pitchers, we're going to kind of, I'm sure we're going to probably just talk mostly about the aces today. How many aces are there? What is your overall starting pitcher strategy? Let's start with that. Scott, what's your starting pitcher strategy right now?
So my starting pitcher strategy is, acknowledging the scarcity of pitchers who are both good and throw a lot of innings. And that's generally my description of ace. And, I like to get two of them, ideally. And usually they're all gone by the end of round five. Maybe Granky sometimes lasts until six. But I like to get two of them in both formats, it turns out, because even in Roto, I don't want to leave my ERA and WHIP to the hands of some ones who could completely blow it for me. So that's my strategy.
So two of what? Two of your top what?
Two of my top. It's been a while since I counted them up. But through Granky, which I think is about, I think it's like 14. I'll get you an exact number in a second.
Okay, Scott, you're on the clock. Heath, Chris, how about you guys?
I'm not quite as optimistic about getting two of my top 14. I definitely would like to have a starting pitcher by the end of the third round, and we saw with our last points draft how ugly your staff can look if you're not able to accomplish that. So if I can get one in the first three rounds of the draft, I'd like to have two of my top 24, but maybe more importantly in terms of strategy, I don't really want to take a starting pitcher from like round five through round nine, because the guys going in round 10 through 15, I think, have almost exactly the same upside and a much cheaper cost.
Okay, you're talking about... So I'm just looking at ADP on Fantasy Pros. Maybe like a Charlie Morton, Robbie Ray. You tell me which ones sound like players you'd want to draft.
Both of those sound great.
Robbie Ray, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the double-digit rounds, 100%.
Yeah, he's at the end of round 10. Luis Castillo, Kyle Hendricks, Tanaka, Jay Happ, Chris Archer. Does that sound like
a
good range?
That's a great group of starting pitchers.
Okay. And I did not include Carlos Martinez because I don't think we want to take him there. At 137 overall, that ADP will keep getting a little bit lower. Chris, how about you? What are you doing at starting pitcher?
I tend to go a little differently than everyone else, and I think it's more format specific in this instance. I think head-to-head points, because of the massive volume that those big starting pitchers can get you, I'm more likely to take someone early, but in a roto league, the chances of me taking someone in the first two rounds in particular are pretty slim, just because I don't think, especially once you get past really Scherzer, I think everyone else has enough question marks that I'm okay waiting and taking someone like usually Trevor Bauer in the third round has actually become a guy who I like taking a lot, and I've come around a lot on him since the start of draft season.
Oh, yeah, man. That's kind of what I am aiming for. I will take Scherzer, you know, seventh, eighth overall, something like that, but Sale and Kluber make me a little nervous. Verlander's really old, and he's thrown a lot of innings, including in the postseason. DeGrom just had by far his best season. It's hard to see him doing that again. I love Severino and Bauer to me are round three pitchers that I'm very excited about. I typically go with that. Just, that's sort of the way I've been doing fantasy baseball for so long now. It's like two hitters and then a pitcher. Just seems to be a good way to start. And you're looking at the end of round three, you're looking at Garrett Cole. Well, he's more early round three. Maybe Blake.
I'd love to get Garrett Cole in the third.
Yeah, he's 26. Blake Snell's 29th. Severino's 33rd. Clayton Kershaw's 34th, but that's probably getting lower. Bauer, Syndergaard, yeah. Carrasco. It's a good range right there. You could take two of them.
I think there's a round and a half of hitters that you could say are first round caliber. I mean, Harper typically goes in the second round. Machado typically goes in the second round. Obviously, we're used to seeing them in the first round. So other than Scherzer, and I put Sale in there also, there's not really a pitcher I would consider drafting in that range. It's once you see a little bit of a drop-off at hitter when, you know, it goes to
like Rizzo?
I don't know. Freddie Freeman and Charlie Blackmon are right on the borderline there for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Goldschmidt's definitely among the hitters that I want to pass up. Machado, Harper, like I said. And then it gets a little questionable.
So wait, you take Scherzer ahead of those hitters and Sale, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Scherzer and Sale, I would take in that range. I'm, you know, exactly when depends, but it would be in that range. I think second half of round two is the first point I would consider any other starting pitcher beyond Scherzer and Sale.
If we could talk about the aces, let's say the top five pitchers who are going in the first 21 picks. Scherzer's ADP is actually fourth overall. DeGrom is 11. Sale is basically tied with him at 11th. Kluber, 19th. Verlander, 21st. Kreith, how do you feel about those top five pitchers? Are they safe? Are they too risky? Worth the investment? You know, what do you think? Scherzer, DeGrom, Sale, Kluber, Verlander?
I couldn't take Scherzer at four, but I think he's about as safe as any pitcher can ever be. He's been absolutely awesome. And yes, he's thrown a ton of innings, and his arm's going to stop working the way that it has at some point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He's 34 years old, right? Like, he's it's going to stop. Like, it's the same thing with Justin Verlander and Corey Kluber, both of whom are in their early to mid, and I think in Justin Verlander's case, he's like 37, right? It's a risky group. Chris Sale's velocity fell a lot last year in the end of the season when he was dealing with that shoulder injury. DeGrom has always been very good, but he made a leap. I'm never going to draft the guy coming off a career year at a premium. So they are as safe as starting pitchers get, which is sort of damning with faint praise in my eyes.
Yeah, Kluber's 33 in April. Verlander's 36, so you're very close. When would you guys take Max Scherzer then? If fourth is too early, when's the right time for Scherzer?
I'm fine with sixth in a points league. I'm not taking him before Altuve or Arenado.
I think that's fair.
Scott?
Yeah, and I might go seventh in a roto league, also putting JD Martinez ahead of him.
How about Trey Turner in a roto league or Max Scherzer?
I'd rather have Turner.
I think I'd rather have Scherzer.
So it seems...
I don't like to block shortstop, so I can't get Mondesi, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, in a roto league, you can just put him at middle infield.
Scott, what if Mondesi's not good? You're going to have a terrible year.
He's going to be good for steals.
Okay.
That much.
Right, but he might not be good.
If he's playing, he'll get steals. He'll be worth starting because there's so few steal sources.
So, more starting pitcher questions here. How many number one starting pitchers do you think there are? Scott, is it Greinke you think is okay being your ace? So that's 14 for you?
Yep, in the count, I had it right. It is 14 that I would be happy including as my ace. Most people wouldn't have Greinke as high as 14. He's someone who makes it easy for me to get that second ace because I can pretty much count on him being there in round five. I don't know why people are so down on him, but whatever. He's so consistent. He puts up ace numbers, 200 innings, about 200 strikeouts every year with a good ERA and whip. I'm sorry, but that's an ace. I would include Patrick Corbin in there, but you know, that's getting kind of fringy. Some people include Walker Buehler in there, but I like to see the innings first before I really trust in a player as an ace.
Heath, what about you? How many aces are there? How many guys that you'd feel comfortable with as your number one?
There are so many tiers within that group, but I think I'd probably say 11, ending at Noah Syndergaard at 11.
Okay.
I feel really, I'd almost stop it at 8 with Garrett Cole, because Carrasco, Bauer, and Syndergaard the next three, you do have some questions. Syndergaard, it's mostly health. But I'd call all those guys aces. Cut it just shy of Luis Severino at 12.
Okay. So, you know, round three, round four, I think we all want to have at least one starting pitcher. And we're not guys who go crazy on starting pitcher. I don't think we're going to start our draft with two pitchers or anything like that, even in a points league. Doesn't mean you can't win that way. It's just not typically how we do it. Some stats about starting pitchers. 15. All right. So we know the trends, right? Guys aren't throwing as many innings now. 3 years ago, the number of 200 inning pitchers hasn't really changed that much. 15 2 years ago, 13 last year. But you look at the number of 190 inning pitchers. It was 30 of them in 2016, then 18 in 2017, back up to 23, but that's still low compared to 30 just three seasons ago. What kind of ERA are you looking for? Of the top 30 starting pitchers in both points and roto, only six had an ERA higher than 350. So a 350 ERA or lower, 24 out of the top 30 starting pitchers had that. The six who did not were J-Hap. He was 17-6. Herman Marquez, he had 230 strikeouts. Rick Porcello, 17-7. David Price, 16-7. Jose Berríos was 28th. He had 202 strikeouts and a 1.14 whip. And James Paxton was 30th. He had 208 strikeouts and a 110 whip. But I don't know. Maybe you want to look at guys with a sub-350 ERA, unless they're going to be really good at something like strikeouts or wins, which is a little hard to predict. Some more stats to consider. Max Scherzer's been a top three starting pitcher three straight seasons. Over his last four seasons, he has a 2.71 ERA, a .93 whip, and he has averaged 282 strikeouts per season. Scherzer just gives you a huge edge. Verlander's been a top three starting pitcher in two of his last three seasons. But oddly enough, 2018 was Verlander's first sub-3 ERA season since 2012. He has thrown a combined 242 and two-thirds innings in 2017, and then 231 and a third in 2018. A lot of postseason work for Justin Verlander. How good was Chris Sale last year? He averaged more fantasy points per inning pitch than both Verlander and Sale. And I got some more stats that we could go through, but... But these stats will kind of come up, I think, organically. So, I don't know if this is getting too much into sleepers, breakouts, and busts. I think this is a separate question, but how do you... I'll start with Scott. As you've done your draft so far, which starting pitchers do you find yourself drafting most often? I think Greinke is going to be one of those guys.
Yeah, Greinke would be answer number one. I am getting many, many shares of Herman Marquez. I don't feel like you have to pay for what you can be, first of all, based on what he did in the second half. And I feel like people are just generally less enthusiastic about him than I am. Those are probably the main two. Let me see if I can come up with a third here. I tend to get... I tend to get a lot of Joe Musgrove, I guess. And Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish is another one who I feel like people are just a little more pessimistic about than I am, considering the kind of injury he's coming back from. I don't really feel like that's going to be something that's going to hold him back this year.
Yeah, Herman Marquez, his last 13 starts, he had a 2.25 ERA. He struck out 118 batters in 88 innings. And he had a 2.99 BABIP, so it wasn't like, you know, he was totally lucky. 16% swinging strike rate, 12 quality starts in 13 starts, did not allow more than 3 earned runs in any start. And in those 13 starts, Marquez had 9 starts of 7 or more innings, including home starts, great home starts against Oakland, St. Louis, San Francisco, Arizona, and Philadelphia. So Marquez was just unbelievable down the stretch.
It was
amazing.
It was as loud and definitive of a breakout as I can remember seeing.
And are we buying it?
From a Rockies pitcher.
Yeah, but are we buying it? Like, how surprised are you that Marquez is this good? What's his pedigree say about what kind of pitcher he should be?
I mean, he throws 98. He has two swing and miss breaking balls. He made some adjustments to his delivery in terms of how he stands on the mound and in terms of fixing his release point, because it was pretty varied between the three pitches. Basically, he was kind of tipping his pitches each time, and he figured that out. And so the stuff really played up. You know, the Colorado thing gives me some hesitation because how many pitchers have been good for the Rockies? You know, Ubaldo Jimenez was in Cy Young contention 1 year, but in terms of historical significance, that's about it. But I think Marquez, because the splits were so even when he dominated, and because the stuff is just that good, I think I'm willing to overlook the Coors Field thing in round, you know, 7 or 8, or where he tends to go in a 12-team league.
And to answer the pedigree question specifically, was never a top 50 prospect on any rankings list. He never averaged more than a strikeout per inning in the minor leagues. This was a lot out of nowhere, and sometimes guys just make drastic improvements in one pitch or two pitches, and then it sticks. But there was not a lot of evidence to show this coming from anywhere.
Look, Ubaldo Jimenez was a big-time prospect. I don't know what – sorry. This is an exact conversation that we would have had in 2010, right?
About Jimenez?
I'm not saying that necessarily means that he's not going to be good, but it's really hard to consistently pitch well at Coors Field. John Gray was a much better prospect. His stuff is arguably just as good, and he hasn't been able to figure it out. Maybe Marquez does have the magic sauce that can work in Coors Field consistently, but I'm a little scared. I think you have to be. And I don't disagree with Scott that it's a good value where he's going. I think you've priced in enough of the discount, but I also don't think the super, super high ceiling is there because of the park he lives in or pitches in.
I don't think
probably doesn't.
Yeah, he lives there. Well, he's going to get a contract.
For sure.
Maybe.
He'll get a raise and be able to afford an apartment, but Marquez is going 101st overall, 27th starting pitcher off the board. Scott has him 18th. Heath has him 25th. And I don't feel like he lasts to pick 100 in our draft, so I'd be very happy to have him because that's probably my third, maybe fourth starter at that point, and that would be, you know, really good value. All right, Chris, how about some pitchers you find yourself drafting off? And you mentioned Trevor Bauer. Who else do you see on a lot of your teams right now?
Yeah, interestingly, I got a lot of guys that I think are risky, but the upside's there. So Trevor Bauer, Aaron Nola, Noah Syndergaard, and Steven Strasburg as my aces are probably the most obvious ones, and then Marco Gonzalez as a late round guy is someone that I've taken pretty much everywhere. I don't get why people just don't think he's good. His ADP is like, I think it's like 400. And he was good last year. For all the, it's 252. For all the reasons
400.
That were, I mean, that might as well
be. Basically 400.
It might as well be.
It's late, yeah.
I've gotten him that late. For all the reasons that we think Nick Pivetta's a top 25 pitcher, there's just as many to think Marco Gonzalez should be a top 30 pitcher or a top 35 pitcher, and he's going 70th at the position.
I mean, it's obvious why he's not being taken there, and it's because he doesn't strike anybody out.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that's a good reason. I'm saying there is a bias in the industry against guys that have a K per nine below 8.
Sure, but like put him up next to Miles Michaelis, and he looks like a very similar pitcher.
Yes.
They're both standouts in ground balls and walks.
He's had some health problems, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like a lot of them.
He dealt with a neck injury last year, but he did make 29 starts.
Right.
All right. So Marco Gonzalez, whether you can get him at 250 or 400, if you're Chris, good value.
Good value at both spots.
And, if I can find him at 400, I'm all over it.
Go ahead, Scott.
He's a significantly better, like he's not a good strikeout pitcher in a general sense, but he is better than Michaelis. I'm down with Gonzalez too. I've drafted him in, at least the last two drafts I've done.
Did you get him at 400?
Not that late, no.
Okay. Heath, who are you drafting?
Look, we talked about it before the show. The Diet Coke machine's not working. Can you give me a break?
Yeah, you got to kick that habit, man.
Chris Archer's another pitcher I draft a lot. I forgot to mention him.
Let's make sure we name them all before Heath goes.
Yeah, Heath.
Basically.
Heath, who are some other pitchers that Scott drafts a lot?
Heath, please tell us.
I'm trying to not make the same mistake that Chris just made and give you my sleeper pitcher I get to sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So I will say I draft several Cardinals a lot. I get Jack Flaherty quite a bit, even though Chris hates him, maybe because Chris hates him. I draft Miles Michaelis a lot. I think he is a great combination in a roto league. If you're going to take a couple of upside pitchers, he will help keep the ratios down while those guys strike everybody out. I also seem to find myself in drafting Kenta Maeda quite a bit, and he's RP eligible as well. We talked about him a little bit on that show. And if there's one more late, I probably out of this group take Jesus Luzardo more than anybody else.
All right. I want to talk about Miles Michaelis because he's going right around Herman Marquez area, a little bit after pick 100. and I'm terrified. I feel like, okay, I'm not really a big FIP, ex-FIP guy, but he had a 3.28 FIP, a 3.67 ex-FIP. If Michaelis has like a 3.50 ERA, and he had 146 strikeouts and 202 thirds, but if he has like a 3.50 ERA instead of 2.83, which is reasonable, I think he's going to be disappointing. He was 18-4. That was part of the reason why Michaelis was eighth in points, 13th in roto. I just don't like a guy with this low of a strikeout rate. I noticed though in his last four starts, I don't know if this means anything, but he was like a strikeout machine almost. He had 27 strikeouts in 27 innings and a 14% swinging strike rate. I didn't see anything that changed. I looked at all the lineups he faced. It wasn't like he was facing a bunch of September call-ups. I didn't see the arsenal change, according to Brooks Baseball. So there's that glimmer of hope. But I'm just very concerned about taking Miles Michaelis as my... I don't want him as my number three, maybe as my number four. And I think he's going to be a pretty divisive guy. There are going to be people with different thoughts on him. Great control, a lot of ground balls. But that's the thing. Like he is a big-time ground ball pitcher, but that usually leads to a higher whip. And he had a 1.07 whip, so I just feel like he was lucky.
Never walks anyway.
Yeah, but 279 BABIP, like for a big-time ground ball pitcher, didn't it seem a little lucky to you guys? I'm not sure. Very hesitant
sure,
with Miles Michaelis. And
but
I feel like, you know, I'm sorry, last point. I feel like if you're going to draft Miles Michaelis, you have to overpay for strikeouts, or at least, you know, if you took Scherzer, then maybe
you don't
could take
though, because they're so cheap in the double-digit rounds.
Strikeouts? Yeah,
yes.
Well, you can find strikeout per nine. What you're hoping is that those turn into like a Nick Pivetta going to 190 innings and getting you 250 strikeouts.
All right. So
I mean, Robbie Ray, Rich Hill, really cheap.
Oh, what's no, they're not. Robbie Ray is not very cheap. Robbie Ray is going ahead of just after Miles Michaelis.
The one thing I will say with Michaelis is, according to the Aces metric by Aaron Sauceda that you can find on sportsline.com, he was actually in the 82nd percentile in stuff. Now, that does take into account command, which would be a place that we would expect someone like Miles Michaelis to shine, but all three of his secondary pitches rate out really well by this metric. So it is possible that there's more upside. You know, he's not Kyle Hendricks throwing 86.
No, and he had I know this doesn't correlate perfectly, but he had a 9.6% swinging strike rate. We've seen a lot. I don't think that's too far from where Jameson Taillon's been.
Yeah, that's about average.
It's not good, but it's not 6.5 K per nine. So I would expect he's going to strike out a few more hitters this year.
All right. Who are you avoiding? Heath, I'll start with you.
Well, I appreciate that, Adam. I was hoping that I get
you
to go first on one of these, and it feels good that I do. I have not drafted, I don't think once, David Price or Madison Bumgarner. I'm just scared of both. I think there's a chance that either one of them could just be almost done this year. And I hate it for Bumgarner because he's not old enough to where we should be concerned about that. But he just has not been a dominant pitcher at all over the last two seasons. I don't get very much Cole Hamels because I don't really buy into he was good for the last 2 months on the Cubs. He was, but he was awful before that. And I don't think the difference between Texas and Chicago was enough to make it that much of a difference in the way he pitched.
All right, Chris, that was very efficient. Thank you, Heath. Chris?
Blake Snell, Walker Buehler, and Patrick Corbin.
Chris hates good pitchers.
I do.
I'm totally with you on Buehler. I'm not going. The innings from 5 to 97 to 176 in three seasons for Buehler. That's terrifying.
And I think it was a little higher than 97 because you have to count playoffs, right? Or is that 97 including the playoffs?
2 years ago. I don't know. It counts the minors.
Either way, it was a massive jump in innings pitch. This is a guy who's had Tommy John surgery. He looks really good, but people are talking about him like he's already Noah Syndergaard, and I've seen him go ahead of Noah Syndergaard in some drafts. Just take Noah Syndergaard then.
Right.
I think he's really, really talented. I don't want Blake Snell and Patrick Corbin as well. It just feels like you have to pay a premium for guys, and it's not quite baking in enough of the inherent risk that comes with the kind of profiles that these three guys have.
Okay, so Snell, why are you avoiding Blake Snell?
He's being drafted really high, sometimes in the top five at starting pitcher, always within the top eight or nine, and I think he's really good. I think you're paying the premium of him having one of the great starting pitcher seasons of the last 20 years. He's not a guy who goes deep into games.
They're not taking him number one.
No. But well,
like, they're getting a little of a discount of what he did last year.
I don't think he was the number one starting pitcher.
He was,
in Roto last year,
well, he was sixth in points, third in Roto. He had a DL stint.
Third.
And I know Heath, Chris, you're going to cite the workload for Snell.
No, I'm really not that. For me, it's the innings. Like,
yeah, that's
not, not the injuries. It's the he doesn't go deep into games. And that was with his control taking a big step forward. Maybe he sustains that, but we see a lot. You know, we talk a lot about with strikeouts where, you know, Giancarlo Stanton being a good example of a guy who made a big leap in strikeouts and then wasn't able to sustain that. That happens all the time with control too. If he can be a 3.5 walks per nine guy, then maybe he can get to six innings per start and become that high volume pitcher.
He can. But, he did it. He did it before his DL stint. And then after he came back from the, he had shoulder fatigue after returning from the DL. Well, but he was being used 6.1 innings per start before the DL stint.
Right. Okay. Plus, so he was just over six innings per start. So non ace workload before he had to go on the DL with shoulder fatigue. And then he was way under average.
Perfect. No problem.
This is
no
the
problem.
Argument. This is the argument against what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. But I just want to point out, they were at least doing that at first with him. All right, Scott, who are you avoiding?
So I was avoiding Kershaw, but now I feel like the panic level has risen so high with his spring injuries that he's actually becoming something of a value. So I'm not avoiding him quite as much anymore.
When would you take Kershaw?
So I just took him in, I think in round 8 of a 10-team league. But so we're talking that 70 to 80 range. That seems about right. Particularly in leagues where pitching is especially a priority. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be willing to gamble on him then because he is going to pitch this year. You know, he might have a season opening DL stint. I suspect there will be another DL stint to rest his back along the way. But, you know, he's going to be good enough. Like, he's got to be must start when he's healthy, probably. And not as dominant as years past, but nobody's paying anywhere close to that anymore. So I don't think he's somebody I'm so much avoiding if his ADP continues to slide. Like, I feel like it has. Mike Fultonevich is another one I'm avoiding. He's on my bust list. He was, you know, he has an elbow issue going on this spring, so maybe his ADP will slide to a point where I'm comfortable with it again. But so far, I haven't seen as much evidence of that. Yeah, he took a big leap in strikeouts last year, but with not such an impressive swinging strike rate, and looks like he had BABIP luck, looks like he had home run luck, and beyond that, the FIP was higher than the ERA. So I feel like his ERA probably should be more in the mid threes to four range, and I'm not confident he's going to have that impressive of a strikeout rate again.
Kershaw and Fultonevich for Scott, avoiding, not Kershaw anymore. If he's going in the 70 to 80 range, Scott's going to jump there, but Fultonevich, not so much. So here comes probably a pretty repetitive portion of the show. We're going to do sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Then we're going to get into ADP review. Hey, maybe we can go through sleepers, breakouts, and busts pretty quickly. And I don't think I really asked you this, but when do you guys take your third starting pitcher? So we'll certainly get into that. And, of course, this is a two-parter. So tomorrow, I'm assuming we'll get to about 20 pitchers in ADP today. And then tomorrow, we'll do what we can to finish it. I imagine on Wednesday, we'll do some late-round flyers and stuff like that. Let's do sleepers, breakouts, and busts. We're coming right back after this.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
So here we go. Sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Who's ready? Scott White, favorite sleepers.
Nick Pivetta is obviously a trendy one. So trendy, in fact, that I haven't been able to draft him. So probably going to skip that one. I like Colin McHugh a lot, who's re-entering the rotation for the Astros and has had some really good years as a starter in the past. I don't think workload's going to be a concern for him because he's already proven he can be that guy who throws 180-plus innings, and obviously he's going to have a great supporting cast. He has been a big strikeout pitcher at times, kind of got away from that before moving to the rotation, but he added the Brad Peacock slider to his arsenal now, which helped him get that strikeout rate back up in the bullpen. So I think there's a good chance he's kind of a sneaky ace for, he could be anyway, for the Astros. And then I also like Zach Eflin, if you want to look a little deeper. Guy who started throwing a lot harder last year. The strikeout rate went up. There were some inconsistencies, but I feel like there's something there for him to work with, and he's a next to nothing cost.
Colin McHugh and Zach Eflin for Scott. Heath, your sleepers.
Yeah, I'll go with Zach Godley. I was just looking at NFBC ADP. It's a lot of letters.
Mm-hmm.
Since February 1st, he is the 96th pitcher off the board at pick 246. That's including relief pitchers as well. And he had a bit of a rough year last year, but he also had a pretty unlucky year. 324 BABIP allowed, 67% strand rate. His FIP was 382. His Sierra was just under 4. He still struck out better than a batter per inning. If the control gets just a little better than it was last year, back around 3 walks per 9 like it was in 2016, 2017, I think he's pretty reliably a top 40 starting pitcher.
Zach Godley, anyone else you wanted to mention?
Well, we're going to have deep sleepers later, but I really like Luke Weaver quite a bit going in that Paul Goldschmidt trade to the Arizona Diamondbacks. It was just a year ago we were pretty excited about his potential. He had a down year, also a bit of an unlucky year, but for the aces metric that Chris has cited on here before, I think he was in the 81st percentile and definitely looks like a guy that could be a change of scenery guy.
Chris, couple sleepers.
Vince Velasquez, who, if you're looking for a narrative with him, he did start working with a mental health coach in the offseason, and the idea is that he gets too amped up, especially when runners are on base. He's got like a 66% left on base percentage for his career. If he can start to normalize that and become a better pitcher with men on base, he has, I mean, we've seen the really good starts from Vince Velasquez. His potential is not that much different than Nick Pivetta's, I think. And yeah, I'll throw Michael Pineda, who has pretty much the same ADP. He was throwing 94-95 in his most recent spring start. Obviously, he was a really exciting pitcher a few years ago. Tommy John surgery, inconsistency. He's never going to be the ace that we hoped he would be, but at 352nd or whatever his ADP is right now, I think he's well worth the risk.
Okay, I don't really trust you with ADP after the whole Marco Gonzalez incident, but...
Sorry, it was 356. My bad.
All right, so Scott said...
I don't know if I buy that at all.
Eflin and McHugh... And, oh, Eflin and McHugh sounds really mean. Godley and Weaver for Heath. And, it does. And Velasquez and Pineda for Chris, among others. There are a lot of pitchers to talk about. Also, Nick Pivetta is sort of the industry favorite. Like, Blake Snell was the industry favorite, I think, last year. I don't think we're going to project Nick Pivetta to be the number 6 pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
But, people are very excited.
We should probably get into why people like Nick.
I want to save it for tomorrow, because I feel like we're going to run out of time to talk about the aces here. But maybe he'll be someone's breakout. And just keep in mind, the Phillies defense is going to be a lot better this year. So we've already heard Pivetta, Eflin, and Velasquez. There's part of the reason is defense. Okay, Scott, breakouts.
Yeah. A lot of high BABIPs for that trio. Breakouts. I like Tyler Glasnow to break out for the Rays. Already kind of showed signs of it after going over from Pittsburgh last year. The strike percentage went up to higher than it ever was in Pittsburgh, and the walks went down. And that's obviously a key. Guy has great stuff, but he needs to throw strikes. The K per nine was up. I think it was up over 10 per nine, even in the starting role. So clearly good stuff. He can get it over the plate. There was a home run issue with the Rays that got the ERA over four despite the success he was having. But it, I kind of feel like that's a small sample size thing. And I'm not saying he won't have trouble with home runs, but not to the exaggerated degree that he did. I think there's a ton of ups. I think there's ace upside here. And he's relief pitcher eligible, which is nice.
Tyler Glasnow. Okay, Heath, breakout?
Yeah, I'll go with Shane Bieber, who's going right in that same range as Zach Godley. And he was, listen, everything that I believe in from last year makes him look like he's just a very good pitcher who had a terribly unlucky year. We may find out this year there's some reason for that bad luck and that he's just not very good with runners on base, or he just gives up too much hard contact when it matters. But better than a strikeout per inning, extremely good control pitcher, and has been throughout his minor league career, and then also gets a lot of ground balls. His FIP was 3.23 last year. His Sierra was 3.45. This looks like a top 30 starting pitcher on a team that should provide him with a lot of wins. Even last year, he only made 19 starts, had a 4.55 ERA, and still won 11 games. This kid Shane, could be really good.
Yep, Shane Bieber, definitely good for team names as well. Chris, breakout.
So Nick Pivetta is off the board?
Go ahead. Take
no, let's go.
Let's talk about
yeah.
it.
Nick Pivetta, everything that Heath just said about Shane Bieber as far as luck, as far as FIP, as far as basically everything that you could look at that we believe tells you about how good a pitcher is, says that he was not just good. He was like top 15 in baseball good. You know, by the Aces metric, he's a top 15 pitcher in terms of stuff. You watch him pitch, he throws hard. He's got good secondary pitches. There might be some kind of mental block. There might be some kind of, you know, maybe he tips his pitches. Maybe there's something that explains why he can't make the jump that we think he can. And I always think of like Ricky Nolasco as a guy who probably could have benefited from throwing fewer strikes. Maybe Nick Pivetta is that kind of guy. And maybe it's a little bit of a mirage, his walk rate, but there are too many indicators that say this guy has ace potential.
It's right, kind of, I feel like, the reciprocal argument to Mike Foltynewicz, where, okay, Pivetta has a great walk rate. He has the swinging strikes that back up the strikeout rate. He just had bad BABIP luck and maybe even some bad home run luck. So I he's exciting.
He might also be Michael Pineda.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the one thing that indicates, that would indicate that Pivetta and maybe, who else are we talking about?
Bieber.
Are not ready. I agree with you guys. I'm just saying, like, the game log. You know, there's just a lot of bad starts there. A lot of really good ones. But they're young.
Actually,
they haven't put it together yet, you know?
I noticed something really interesting with Bieber where his, like, 10 best starts, his walk rate was like 7%, and his 8 or 9 worst starts, whatever the number was, his walk rate was like 3%. He is definitely a guy who is better when he throws fewer strikes because he's got good stuff, but not great stuff. So he needs to be outside of the strike zone a little more often.
All right, let's do busts real quick here, guys. We got to get into ADP as much as we can. Let's go Scott, Heath, Chris. Give me a bust or two.
I do think Kershaw still has total bottom-out bust potential, but the one I'm even more concerned about is Madison Bumgarner, who we talked a little bit about at the top, but velocity down. For 2 years in a row, swinging strike rate down, strikeout rate was down. And last year, seemingly because he needed to figure out some way to get outs, the walk rate shot up too. So I think it's career worst strikeout rate, career high walk rate, and everything is just trending the wrong direction. I feel like Bumgarner is hanging by a thread here. If he doesn't show skills improvement this year, then he might be on the verge of disaster.
Got absolutely rocked in his first spring start, too.
Yeah, he bounced back, though. His second spring start was good.
But,
He's going 75th.
First one's more important.
Yeah, 75th overall for Bumgarner. That's 22nd pitcher off the board in between Jameson Taillon and Jose Berríos. Heath, bust.
I'm going with Fulte, Mike Foltynewicz. And Scott said something funny the other day. He may not be a bust now because this injury might cause his ADP to fall long enough. If it's if an elbow injury is what's going to keep you from being a bust, you're probably a bust. I just don't really buy into anything that he did last year. The walk rate didn't really improve. The swinging strike rate didn't go up enough to make him look like a great strikeout pitcher. He posted a 251 BABIP against, which is great, but I don't believe he really has that much control over it. A career high strand rate. He's a high threes ERA pitcher, I think, in a good case scenario.
So Bumgarner for Scott, Foltynewicz for Heath. Chris, how about you?
Jack Flaherty.
Scott, come on, Chris.
What's that?
Come on.
What?
Don't say that.
Why?
Don't say that. Say Walker Buehler.
No, I think Walker Buehler is much better than Jack Flaherty as a pitcher. I think he's probably being drafted too high because of innings concerns. But Jack Flaherty has innings concerns because he averaged about 5.3 innings per start.
But if you throw 180 innings in a season, that's plenty good to be a top 25 pitcher.
Right. Maybe he will do that.
He did last year.
Between the majors and minors.
Right.
What was his start innings per start in the majors?
Just barely. It was 31 innings. So like it did not have a huge impact.
Well, it was 31 innings over five starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a much higher
inning. Probably three to four more.
He innings. Is not an efficient pitcher. He has not been good through the third time in the order. He doesn't really, for all the hype that we're putting on him, the aces metric doesn't think that he has great stuff. Above average, sure, but he's between Derek Holland and Chase Anderson at the 58th percentile.
Then what about the strikeouts, though? I mean, what's more important? Because 182 strikeouts in 151 innings says great stuff. But and the aces metric is very cool. So what, you know, how do you sort of combine those two?
He will strike a lot of guys out. I just think there's the potential. This feels a lot like Robbie Ray a year ago because he doesn't have good control.
He doesn't have Robbie Ray. Like 3.5 walks per nine is like
could get
the
that
best case.
He has
scenario.
Below average control. Robbie Ray had some disastrous.
Sure, but
in his past,
like Jack Flaherty was at 9.6% walk rate. That's pretty bad. That's not that. I think Robbie Ray was like 11% the year before.
All right, let's Flaherty. And the thing about Flaherty is that he is going pretty high. He's 19th pitcher off the board, 66th. I guess that's a fair range. Right after Greinke, before Clevinger, before Tyone, before Bumgarner, before Berríos. You know, we're certainly seeing a point where the pitchers are losing their luster in ADP.
Yeah. I mean, I have Jack Flaherty in my breakouts 1.0. I have Jack Flaherty there. It may just be that the price tag is too high to, it's kind of presumed breakout is baked in there, but I'm not as much of a downer as Chris. I mean, you look at his minor league track record. Control wasn't an issue there. He had 2 walks per nine at Memphis last year, and the year before in the minors, it was 2.1 per nine. Like if you look at the game log, where he had trouble pitching deep into games were the starts where he struggled with walks. And if he has the ability to throw strikes that he's demonstrated in the past, I think the fact that the Cardinals let him pitch deep in the games when the pitch count didn't get way up on him, I think indicates there might be, if he can overcome that control thing, then he is on the verge of being an ace.
Can I ask one question?
Here we go.
You can ask two.
What was his K per nine? The years when he was walking not that many guys.
11.6 last year.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 31 innings before that.
Okay. In 2017 when it was 2.1, it was right at a strikeout per inning.
Okay. Like these aren't 10.8. We're drafting him to be an elite strikeout guy. That was Azer's rebuttal to me saying that he might not be that good as well. 180 strikeouts in 150 innings. Well, if he's a strikeout per inning guy, if he's a less than a strikeout per inning guy, which he pretty much was most of his minor league career with the exception of last year, maybe he improves the command. But there's also a pretty decent chance that the strikeouts aren't there the way we hope they are.
All right,
it's a lot of wishing.
I'm going to call an audible, and I don't know if we're going to get to ADP. We're going to do a bit of a shorter show today. We have about 10 minutes left. I want to talk more about structuring your pitching staff. And tomorrow will probably be like full average draft position. One through 70-ish, something like that. But yeah, let's talk about more about when you want, when you want to get your number three starting pitcher. And by the way, I haven't given everybody the reminder, but I'm reminding you now. If you want to play on CBSSports.com, you would be a very smart person. Go to CBSSports.com/FBT and sign up for our Commissioner League. It is awesome. Especially if you're, you know, like really into customizing your stats, your rosters, all that stuff. Dynasty leagues, the in-app tools are amazing. CBSSports.com/FBT. Get in the commissioner product. All right. But yeah, what else do you want to say about if somebody says, hey, I've never done fantasy baseball before. How should I draft pitchers? When should I draft pitchers? Heath, what would you say to this stranger who just approached you on the street because you're wearing a shirt that says BABIP on it?
It does say BABIP and WOBA and FIP, XFIP. So yeah, I think what I said very, very early in the show kind of goes back to this. There is this range of starting pitchers, and it probably starts about with Chris Archer, where they should probably be, based on the guys that are going in the 6th, 7th, 8th round, they should probably be pitchers that go in the 6th, 7th, or 8th round, but they're available starting in round 10 and much, much later. Nick Pivetta, a guy we talked about a lot, 13. Shane Bieber, round 13. So for me, the way to draft starting pitcher is I would like to, like Scott said, have two very good, maybe top 20 starting pitchers in the first four or five rounds, maybe sixth round of the draft. After that, I'm waiting until those value pitchers for my number three pitcher. I'm fine if my number three is Chris Archer. I'm fine if it's Nick Pivetta. But what I'd like to do is have three or four of those guys. I don't really want to wait for my fifth starter until the end of the draft. I'd like to have Bieber, Pivetta, and Archer as my 3, 4, 5 or something like that.
All right. I don't think I'm that risky with starting pitcher. I'm not saying you're wrong. That could definitely work.
I think you're drafting those, like, especially Archer, you're pretty much drafting at his floor. There is zero risk.
There's zero risk? He's not that good. He's 3 straight years with an ERA.
You don't get.
Yeah.
No, he's going to throw enough innings and strike out enough hitters to be worth a 10th round pick.
All right, maybe. Now, I think there's a case to be made for Archer because he's out of the AL East and he was pitching hurt last year. But if he is what he's been, he's an ERA over 4 and a whip over 1.24 three
but
straight
he's
years.
Also 200 innings and 230 to 40 strikeouts.
But not last year.
Like, if you get hung up on the ERA, you're not
going to
like Archer. But
no,
if you get
Scott,
hung up
ERA
on the
and
matters.
The whip. The ERA, the
ERA
whip,
matters.
And the whip.
Matters.
He is a one-category guy. He is a one-category guy. That's true.
Yeah, he throws a ton of innings.
That's not a category. He's all you're getting is strikeouts. That's it.
It's a ton of. It's like among the league leaders in strikeouts, though. And it's not a bad ERA and WHIP. It's not.
It's
like
a bad ERA and WHIP. It was bad.
It was a bad WHIP.
It's below average, but it's not like the what you're gonna get from guys you stream off the waiver wire.
God, the excuses made for Chris Archer is just.
And his
no, I mean,
like
look
his
at where he finishes every year.
I will tell you where he finishes.
Let's look at his WHIP before last year.
Yeah, 1.24.
Okay, his career WHIP is 1.24.
That's not that good.
That's not bad.
That's not
that
a
is
plus.
Definitively not
in
bad.
The category. 2017.
Okay, the worst.
Go ahead.
The worst case scenario is he's probably not helping you in ERA and WHIP.
Right.
That's not a bad scenario when there's pitchers whose worst case scenario is they don't make 15 starts.
I think that,
ahead of him.
Yeah, by the way, he threw 148 in a third and had off-season hernia surgery. So,
throwing out last year was weird for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, it was
but
bad. Okay, that's fine.
2 years prior.
I think that, I feel like Heath, I sort of would just take your pitching strategy and maybe get one more pitcher in the, like, Tanaka range. To make me feel a little bit better about my number.
But isn't Tanaka Chris Archer?
He's going a little later than I thought. Maybe like someone in the Jose Berríos range in like the 80s.
Isn't Jose Berríos Chris Archer?
No, I think Berríos could be a lot better than Chris Archer. But
Archer could be a lot better than Chris Archer.
Okay, he hasn't been
Jose
better
Berríos
than Chris
hasn't
Archer.
Been that much better. Well, no,
he,
but Jose
it's
Berríos
been
hasn't
3 years.
Been that much better.
It's been 3 years. I know, but
it's been 2 years for Jose Berríos. Plus the
Chris,
third year,
Chris, you're not
really,
listening to me.
Really bad.
You're not listening to me.
For each of those years.
Yeah, but it hasn't been like super good. It's been in the 3-8 range.
It's good.
Yeah, no.
Archer, are we saying Archer can't be in the 3-8 range?
I think Berríos. All right, so let's get off Archer. Because maybe he's a great value and that's it. This is not about Chris Archer. This is just about when you're drafting starting pitchers. Before I get to that upside, downside range, guys who, like Pivetta, who haven't really proven it, but obviously have great upside, I think I'd like to have 3 pitchers. before I start picking from that range. I guess that's the only difference I could think of. Like,
right.
But that's the point, I think, is that the early mid-range pitchers, the guys after the aces, are upside downside guys too.
Yeah,
like, we're talking about Jose Berríos as if he's not.
No,
we're talking about
Jameson,
and I love Jameson Taillon. I think Zach Wheeler can be really good, but these are all upside downside guys. Like, if we're talking about the difference between a Chris Archer and a Jose Berríos is what, 0.2 of a run of expected ERA.
All right,
over
so
the
please,
course of the
please
season?
Stop with Chris Archer because he's different.
No, but he's a great value. Of a larger point.
Then he's a great value. Then Chris Archer himself is a great value, and people should target him. I will give you that, even as the guy who's down on Chris Archer. He's a great value. But if you compare Jameson Taillon and Jose Berríos to Nick Pivetta and Robbie Ray and Cole Hamels, guys like that, I think that there's more of a difference. I think that this is a more valid conversation. I'd like to have a little more safety and still plenty of upside with Taillon and Berríos
as my third guy. Different tiers.
Yeah, I'd like three there. Go ahead, Scott. Scott?
Yeah, I mean, Berríos and Taillon just do what they did last year. Obviously, they're must-starts when a guy like Robbie Ray with major control issues, with major home run issues, you know, you're asking him to make a leap forward. So that I agree with that. My third starting pitcher, it tends to be somebody like Germán Márquez if I can get him at what I feel is a good value, or Chris Archer if I can get him at what I feel like it's a good value. And if it's not them, then it usually ends up being somebody like Cole Hamels or Jay Happ, who I feel like are right there in terms of innings and strikeouts. They fall just a little short of the ace tier, but I know I can count on them for accumulating the innings and the strikeouts. There's at least enough promise there, and they showed it last year, that I think they can kind of mimic ace production just at a slightly lower level. And obviously they have good teams backing them that allows them to hopefully win a decent number of games too.
I would love to look back at the ADP last year, because I would guess once you get past whatever X number of ace pitchers there are, I would guess the number of guys who are just flat out busts is probably 50% or higher throughout, like starting at like 20 and beyond. I would bet it's about that high.
Well, I think you gotta find the guys you like. You know, I like Taillon. Berríos, actually, the funny thing is he reminds me a lot of Chris Archer. He gives up so many home runs on the road. He's exactly what Archer
does
with the Rays.
No more Chris
Archer.
So
I shouldn't have mentioned
him.
But like, we haven't said Zach Wheeler. We haven't said Luis Castillo. Like, he's a guy I would take as my number three starter before I get to the more risky range.
He's Nick Pivetta.
Oh, he is Nick Pivetta and Shane Bieber.
No, like, Luis Castillo has had much better results. Much better results than those guys.
He had one half season that was better.
No, he had one bad. He had like the first 10 starts of last year were bad. Everything else has been really damn good for him. Last 25 starts, he had a 3.57 ERA. Last 14 starts, he had a 2.63 ERA. You cannot see, this is what bothers me about you stats people. You cannot tell me that Luis Castillo is Nick Pivetta when Luis Castillo
Adam,
has performed so
Adam,
much better than Nick Pivetta.
Adam.
Chris.
I'm going to read six numbers.
Okay.
I want you to tell me what they are.
Well, ERA matters, but go ahead.
7.85. 3.48, 6.75, 2.25, 5.57, 1.09.
I have no
you just
idea.
Told us, I know.
No idea.
It's really obvious. You just told us a really neat story about Luis Castillo where the last 25 starts he had a 3.47 ERA, and the last 11 starts he had a 2.67 ERA.
No, wrong.
Those were his month-by-month, whatever the numbers were. Those were his month by month.
Oh,
ERA.
Are you forgetting about 2017?
So when you tell me he's had a sustained amount of success Nick Pivetta can't match.
I didn't say Nick Pivetta was trash for three of six months last. Chris, I did not say that Nick Pivetta cannot match that. I'm saying you're forgetting about 2017. Luis Castillo came up and was great against a very daunting schedule. He has accomplished a lot more than Nick Pivetta has.
I was the first person to tell you about Luis Castillo.
There's no question.
Luis Castillo from my womb.
Find the guys you like. It doesn't matter. You know, you can listen to whoever you want. Find the guys you like, but you know, they're, I'm just saying I'd invest a little earlier in my number three starting pitcher, and we got off track with that. Final thoughts?
I think the point is the attrition rate outside of the aces is so high that, yeah, you can target the guys you want, but there's a pretty good chance.
You're so doom and gloom with pitchers, though. You're always like, pitchers are always hurt. Pitchers suck. You can never find good. Like, you're so doom and gloom. What a terrible, pessimistic note.
I love a lot of low.
He's taking now. Is I love. He was the guy who passed up all the aces last.
I love a lot of low end pitchers.
Upside picks, and they all blew up in his face.
Yeah, I love a lot of low end pitchers. But. Pitchers do get hurt. Like, it's like
so do hitter.
40 to 50%.
Yeah.
Right, but it's a much lower rate.
Yeah,
they go on the DL about half as often as starting pitchers.
I don't know. It's like to wait so long and to bank so much of your pitching staff on upside.
No, you already have two starters.
Nobody's saying that. We're talking about the third starter.
Yeah, but you're talking about third starters who haven't accomplished anything yet in the big leagues that you're just hoping for their upside.
By the way, I have Castillo and Pivetta ranked right next to each other. You could just take Castillo instead of Pivetta where I said to take Pivetta.
All right. That's a great way to end the show. So thank you, guys. A little shorter today, but we'll have a longer show, I'm pretty sure, tomorrow. And we'll get through a lot more in average draft position. We haven't gotten through anything in average draft position. Thanks a lot for listening. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Once we're done with the position previews, we're going to get to more of your emails. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I want to thank Heath. I want to thank Scott. Bye, Chris. And see you later, listeners. We'll talk to you on Tuesday with Starting Pitchers Part 2.